Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 178. And we are live on Odyssey. We are live on DLive. We are live on Radio Albion. And we are live on Wake Up UK. And if you are watching tonight, we have a few more streams coming up later in the week. I'm live with Laura Towler at 7 p.m. this Friday for the Patriotic Alternative Monthly Roundup. That'll be the roundup for September. I am live also on Sunday with Barkley, with Sam, and with the Patriot for the Nationalist A team. That show's really taking off, and it's an Odyssey exclusive. And I might be doing a few more streams as well between now and then, including one tomorrow night, and I'll be sharing that when it goes live, and I might be doing something on Saturday night. Also, as you may know, I have a debate scheduled with Greg Johnson, which looks like it was going to be this Saturday, but I think it's going to be put back to the 15th, about the Ukraine. I'm going to be talking a lot about Ukraine, about Putin, and about his recent speech tonight. Now, if you want to contribute to my work and to this show and to the good work Patriotic Alternative does, or if you just want to ask questions to myself and my esteemed guest here, you can send super chats via Entropy. The Entropy link is in the chats now. You can also hit that support button over on Odyssey. There's a little support button. You hit that. That helps me a lot because it means you can send donations. Now, we don't ask for huge donations. We don't ask for people to send their life savings. What we just say is, if you value this show, if you value my work, please give $3, $5. That's the price of a pint of beer. It's nothing really, but it means a great deal to me if enough of you do it over the month. These shows are watched by over 10,000 people every month. But if everyone just gave $3, that would be the difference between us scraping by and us having a power-winning movement. So if you enjoy my content week in, week out, please think about a small contribution. You can also contribute more anonymously through cryptocurrencies, and all the links to my magic beans, which at the moment are somewhat in the toilet, but you can still give me money via that method. And the links to all of those are in the description below the Odyssey video or the description of the BitChute replay if you're watching it on replay there. Finally, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you need any help, if you need any advice, if you've got any questions about anything I do, or if you'd like to donate via alternative means or by cryptos that you cannot see. Now, let's get straight into the show tonight, because you know what we're talking about. And to be fair, when I said I was going to be talking about what we're talking about tonight, Putin's recent speech and the conflict, or the ongoing conflict in the Ukraine, people said to me, get on the best man for the job. And I'll tell you this, Eric Stryker was busy, so we've got Warren Balog instead. Just a joke, my friend. It's just banter. Warren is, of course, one of the best, if not the best. Him and Eric are probably neck and neck when it comes to being the best geopolitical analysts within the nationalist scene today. Warren is somebody who is at the very top of his game. His content is amazing. His writing is insightful. And every time he comes on this show, I always wish it was a three-hour stream. And trust me, with the amount of streams I do every week, I never wish it was a three-hour stream, unless I'm joined with a man of this quality. Honestly, I hold this guy here in the very highest regard. And not just because he's a good thinker, because there's good thinkers out there, but he's also a man of action. He doesn't just sit on the internet pontificating about big brain ideas. He's out there in the real world doing things, but he's also a husband and a father. This guy has basically done it all. He's done everything that a good nationalist should do, and he is at the very top of his game. Warren, it's a great, great honor to have you here tonight to discuss this important topic. Please tell people what you've been up to recently, then we'll get into some of this discussion.
Well, thank you, Mark. That's an amazing introduction. As always, you always do the best introductions of anybody on the internet, and that was great. Thank you. And the same goes, of course. You're lately You've been pulling any punches on Telegram lately. I haven't had a chance to catch one of your streams in a while, but just the statements you've been putting out have been great. And I know we've been referring to it a lot. Like, well, Mark Collette said this, Mark Collette said that on a lot of the podcasts we do. What I've been up to lately, I'm co-hosting Fashion Nation with Jazz Hands McFeels on the rightstuff.biz radio network. We do that every weekend and try to put one out usually late Saturday night. So it's out early Sunday. We just did, for anyone, if this isn't enough content on the Putin speech, he and I just did a full breakdown of it on our last show that's out. And that show is not paywalled anymore. That show is out for free, so everybody can go listen to that. And then I do another show on Thursday nights on the same network with Mike Painovich, Mike Enoch, the chairman of the National Justice Party. We do a show on Thursday, then that is behind the TRS paywall. And the other thing that I just did was last night, Emily and I filmed a New Modern Politics, which anybody who is a fan of that show, we haven't put one out in about 4 months. It's been an incredibly busy summer, stuff with NJP, a lot of traveling around, some family stuff. It's been hard for us to get them out. But this one, I think, is very important because it takes on, and it'll be out probably tomorrow. We took on the core ideology of the United States. And we used the example of a couple of propaganda films from the World War II era and the immediate post-war period that the U.S. government put out and one that a conservative think tank put out or a nonprofit. We used those as the examples to sort of define, say, here's what the ideology of this country was being defined as by the people who run it 80 years ago. And here's where we are today. And let's compare notes and see what that has led to. And also that it hasn't changed that much. The shocking thing that we found is that the party line, people kind of romanticize the past sometimes, but the party line put out by the U.S. government in, say, 1948 is shockingly similar to the party line put out by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris today. It hasn't changed as much as people think it has. It's actually pretty consistent over the past 75, 80 years. And it has to go. The whole thing has to go. The worldview behind it has to be attacked. You can't attack part of it and leave the rest of it intact. You have to dismantle the whole thing because it's all based on lies and because it's killing the white race in the United States. But anyway, so that's what I've been up to lately. We had a big successful NJP meeting recently, about 400 people last month. And, you know, we're going to be doing those quarterly, if not more. And we also, if anyone's not aware, we launched a supporter platform on the NJP website where folks can basically subscribe to be like a monthly contributor to the NJP, which is something that was sorely lacking. It took us very long to get that done and rolled out. And, you know, we're always kind of, all of us, Mark, are so used to just doing this by the seat of our pants that we were all kind of like nervous even asking for money at all. But we've actually grown to the point where we had to have some kind of consistent revenue, you know, to keep the thing going so that we can pay professional people to manage it, so that we can put on these big events, so that we can travel and do activism. And it's been very successful so far, in spite of the fact that people, you know, you can contribute with crypto, check, personal check or money order, but we can't do credit card payments, as you know. So it's amazing with all the roadblocks thrown in our way, people are still willing to chip in and help out and go through all the hassle of using crypto. So yeah, things have been well. This has been a tremendous year for the NJP, and it's just getting better.
Well, that is good to hear. And one final thing before we get into the show, I just want to thank, somebody just reminded me in the chat, Cat Hugger. I just want to thank, remind everyone, I've just been reminded that it was my birthday earlier this week. It's my birthday on the 3rd of October. And I just want to thank everyone who sent.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Everyone who sent such kind birthday messages to me. And if I didn't reply to you personally or didn't see your message in one of the chats, my apologies. I tried to reply to everyone. I have just been reminded of that in the chat. A year older, but hopefully not that much rougher. Anyway, let's get into this because Obviously people want us to talk about Putin. People want us to talk about that speech. And I've got to say, and I'm going to kick this off by saying, I think this was the most important speech of this nature to be made post 1945. Since the end of the Second World War, we have not seen a speech made with that kind of terminology that openly challenges the Judeo-American establishment in the terms or from the terms of something that could sound like it was from a nationalist. Now, we've had that. We've had the Judeo-American establishment challenged from a more from an openly sort of Marxist with openly Marxist rhetoric or from the old Soviet Union, but never with a speech that sounded like this. And for me, that speech sounded stronger than anything we've heard from elected nationalist leaders in Europe. So it sounded stronger than anything Marine Le Pen has said, anything that the AfD have said in Germany, anything that's been said by the Swedish Democrats. And interestingly, and this is the reason why I think this is important, it's not because I am Putin's number one fanboy, but I believe that having somebody as powerful as Vladimir Putin, someone who is the leader of a world nuclear superpower, presenting himself as a counterbalance to Judeo-American Western liberal democracy is important. Because if every government of the world was all on the same page about everything, and they were all pushing globo homo, degeneracy, replacement migration, they were all on the same side, I think our fate would be sealed. And I think then there would be no resistance. But having a global counterbalance to what I term the American state, and the American state isn't just America, it also includes America's vassal states, such as the British establishment. The British establishment and the American state are, to most of the listeners or viewers here tonight, the oppressive powers that have destroyed their nations. And you might be saying, well, who are you speaking to? Well, I'm speaking to mainly tonight Britons and Americans. And we have actually been, and Putin said this, that the Western people who live under those systems have been subjugated just as much by those systems as the rest of the world. And I think that's an important point to make as well. He wasn't simply saying, right, West is bad. He wasn't simply saying America bad. He said, and he made it clear, the American state is bad. Now, I'm not saying Putin is on our side. He is not an ethno-nationalist. He is not going to buy 200,000 copies of my book and give them to all influential people all over the world or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, I believe it is critically important to have a global counterbalance, not just me and Warren talking on a show like this, but an actual global superpower that dares be a counterbalance to the moral degeneracy, to the anti-family attacks, to the replacement migration, and to all the other madness that we see today. And if you read what Putin said, I'm not saying it was perfect, and I'm not saying everything in it was absolutely roses, but the vast majority of it is the kind of thing that you would hear in a speech given at any nationalist meeting around the Western world. And because of that, I think the weight he gives to a speech like that shows people in the West, that fundamentally there is another way. This isn't just Mark Collett speaking to 150 people at a conference. This is Vladimir Putin speaking for the whole Russian Federation. And that's why it's important. It is about a counterbalance to what I see as the world's greatest evil and the greatest, what I perceive to be the greatest threat to our survival as a race, which is the American state and its vassal states that operate under its auspices, which includes Britain. So, Warren, have I lost it? What do you think? You're a man who, you know, follows these things closely, and I have complete respect for your opinion. So please go ahead.
Well, I think if you have to look at speeches, there was a recent speech given by Viktor Orban in Transylvania, in Romania, the former Hungary, that was very explicit about even race, talking about the white race. And then he was forced to sort of walk that back, or he chose to walk it back. I don't want to take away responsibility from him. But that was a remarkable speech. That was one of the best. But some of the larger, and this was on that level, I haven't heard Marine Le Pen or anyone else, any other European leader other than that speech by Viktor Orban come close to this. There were some points in this speech Viktor Orban hasn't even touched, that the last time I heard a world leader say some of the points in this speech was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, back during the Bush years. And he was really great. He made a number of critiques of the West, of Europe, of the fact that the states of Europe, states like Germany, are occupied puppet states, that they are oppressing their own people, that they're putting up monuments to their own conquerors and their own oppressors. But as we all know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was, he's not even in favor with the Ayatollah right now. He was sort of a, I don't want to say a rogue factor, but he was certainly his own man within Iranian politics. And he has been sidelined. He was looking to run for president again. And I think the Ayatollah and others said, no, we don't want you to run again, because he was very controversial. He hosted David Duke in Iran, in Tehran, and had a conference on Holocaust revisionism. But Iran, even though Iran is still a powerful state as a Middle Eastern state, it's nothing compared to Russia. Russia is a top, as a nuclear power, Russia is second to none. I mean, Russia is on the same footing with the United States. In terms of its landmass and its resources, Russia is probably, what, the largest country in the world by landmass. By population, it's about, what, half or a third what the U.S. is. In terms of its economy, it's way less. It's conventional military. It's pretty strong. They are having some difficulties with this situation in Ukraine, because there's so much being flooded in from the other side. But it's extremely significant, Mark, to have a leader. I agree with you. To have a world leader stand up and say some of the things that he said. And I don't necessarily think even that Putin represents another way for us to take, or for the West to take, so much as he is just, as you say, a counterweight to what we have here. I try to look at this in foreign policy realist terms. You know, I just reread Machiavelli's The Prince, and I've been really getting into like realist foreign policy. And from a realist perspective, I'll tell you how I broke it down on FTN. Some of the critiques, I found that the most important things that he said in his speech was when he was going after stuff in Europe. You know, he referenced what happened with Nord Stream, the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, the fact that the U.S. is treating its European allies like absolute crap, is just walking all over them right now and just expecting them to suck it up, and including the U.K. And Putin criticized that and attacked that. He talked about the firebombings of Dresden and Hamburg. He talked about the dropping of the nuclear bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the impression that I got, and this is what I said on FTN, was that Russia had a lot to gain by the post-war international order that was set up in 1945. The Soviet Union, I should say, gained a lot from that outcome of that war. It was very powerful, and the Soviets and the Americans sort of divided up the world between them, and Europe included. And France and Britain, of course, were reduced to from first world, like first rate top world powers, to second rate world powers, and that was exposed in the decades after World War II. But it was in the Soviet Union's interest to pretend that the settlement of World War II was just, was fair, was, you know, according to international principles, to a point. What happened in 1989 through like 1991 was Russia had a major breakdown of its system. The Soviet Union collapsed, and the U.S. as the sole superpower left moved in quickly to gobble up the power vacuum in Europe, in Eastern Europe, even in Russia itself, with you know, these powerful Jewish oligarchs and the state selling off the resources of the state to these oligarchs. So the way I compared it was this. This is the analogy I use. If World War II is three guys, one guy is fighting the other two guys. The two guys team up. They beat up the third guy. The third guy falls on the ground. He's unconscious. They take his wallet. And they take all the money out of his wallet and they divide it up between themselves. They divide up the spoils between themselves. That's Russia, or that's the USSR and the USA at the end of World War II. Then in 1991, the one guy slips and falls and hits his head, and his wallet falls out. Now the third guy takes the money, not only that he took from the first guy, but now he takes the money out of the wallet that the second guy took from the first guy. So now he's got all the money. He cleaned up. I feel like what happened in 1989 to 1991, and what's happened since, is the U.S. just cleaned up the spoils of the USSR's victory of World War II. So now Russia is sort of getting its legs back. It has been for decades now under Putin. And they're saying, well, wait a minute, this settlement is not fair. And it's no longer in Russia's interest to pretend that the settlement in Europe is fair, or that, for instance, the German government is not a puppet state. And it's not in their interest to go along with and play along with this idea that there's this rules-based international order. I felt that was one of the best statements in Putin's whole speech, was when he said, who decided on these rules? Where do these rules come from? You know, this idea of the rules-based international order. No, it was tremendous. And again, if we want to be really coldly analytical about it and not get into, you know, Putin is Hitler 2.0, like you said, it's not fanboying Putin, but just on a very clear-eyed assessment of the situation, this is good for dissidents in the West. Everyone who's being oppressed and murdered by these horrible governments, it's good to have a global counterweight. And that's what is happening right now. So yeah, and he addressed all these points that we're always dealing with. I mean, we can go down through them. I brought up the transcript of his speech.
Please do. That would be really important, because, as I said, and this needs to be really made clear, because one of the things that really annoys me is this reductive argument that people make, where if you say something positive about anyone, then you're shilling for them.
Yes.
But it's got to be said that all of these sort of CivNet leaders that we have seen elected in either Western Europe or elsewhere, none of them have made a speech as powerful as Putin's, and none of them have ever gone as far as to call the Western liberal elite satanic. And what he is doing by that is saying, your leaders are the threat to the world, and they are.
Right.
And I strongly agree with that. I would say the greatest threat to the British people are the British establishment. The greatest threat to the American people are the American establishment.
Yeah.
And for a world,
well, I would say that the greatest threat to the British people is the American establishment. I mean, it all emanates from this country. I'm sorry to say it all emanates from what we call ZOG, you know, Zionist Occupied Government. And that's how I'm going to refer to it probably for the rest of this broadcast. But ZOG is the source of the poison. And as soon as the Cold War ended, it turned all of its weapons against its own people in a way that I think I said this to you on a different show. But I mean, Mark, where I'm living right now in West Virginia, the small town that I grew up in, when the Cold War ended in the 1990s, two things happened in the small town that's closest to me. One, the local shoe factory that gave employment to half the county was closed down and moved overseas. And then two, the Oxycontin and all the drugs were introduced. So it's like a double whammy. We win the Cold War. America emerges as the only superpower. And immediately, the ruling elites unleash this double whammy on the people, the white people of the United States, like they are going to war now on their own people. And now we see it also because we've been dealing with a lot of FBI harassment. I don't know if you saw the speeches. Greg Conte gave a tremendous speech. People should go and watch it on the all the abuses of the FBI. The FBI, there have been a lot of whistleblowers. It's not just us saying it, saying how the FBI is ginning up fake white terrorism, white racialist extremist stuff. I mean, we could spend the whole rest of this show going through the abuses of the FBI. But what I'm saying is the entire apparatus that was built up during the so-called war on terror, the Homeland Security apparatus that the Bush administration built up, and they did it with white patriots signing on because, oh, we got to go fight the Muslims, right? They have turned that entire state security apparatus, which is effectively secret police, they have turned them around on what patriotic white Americans. And they use Charlottesville as the excuse. Then they use January 6th even more as the excuse. So effectively, the United States is making war on its own people, on the white people who built this country. And they're also now with Nord Stream and everything else, or what they're doing to the British pound, they are making war on their occupied, their allies, their so-called allies in Europe. They're making war on them as well. Sorry to interrupt you there, but I completely agree.
And I think, was it Henry Kissinger who said being an enemy of America is dangerous, but being a friend of America is even more dangerous?
Did you see the Dark Brandon speech, the speech where Joe Biden stood up there with the red? So Biden gave this speech, it's funny to compare it to Putin's speech. Biden gave this speech where it was right before our NJP meeting and Mike spent his speech responding to it. He gives this speech in Independence Hall in Philadelphia. He's flanked by U.S. Marines on either side. I mean, it looks like the Emperor in Star Wars, you know, when he has all his like red guards next to him.
But I like the Emperor and I don't like Biden.
Well, he's similar to Biden. There's the same level of decrepitness, of like revolting decrepitness with the Emperor and Biden. But
I will say though, the Emperor could do like backflips and shoot lightning out of his fingers. I'd be surprised if Biden can get out of bed without a shot of amphetamine.
Well, that's what I was going to say. With some of the drugs they gave him to give that speech, I mean, he might have been able to shoot lightning out of his fingers. I don't know. You know, probably when they juice him up right before a speech, he might have been able to do that. But the point is, it was a very scary speech. He basically gives his speech. He's flanked by these Marines, which, by the way, is you're not supposed to do that in this. I don't know about the UK how it works, but in this country, the US military is supposed to be totally nonpartisan, separate. You cannot do politics like engage while wearing a uniform. So this was a big controversy to have these Marines basically there while Biden's making Democratic Party points, demonizing what he called MAGA Republicans. But he was basically saying that we need like a war on terror on the so-called MAGA Republicans. And we all know what we think of Donald Trump, and it's true. But this was unprecedented. He did it with this red lighting. And this is right before he was talking about the Second Amendment here, and a few days before he had said this in a press conference or something, he had this line where he said that there's no point in basically in having the Second Amendment, in being able to own an assault rifle, an AR-15. He said, because if you want to fight the government, you're not going to need AR-15s, you're going to need F-15s. So, I mean, here he is like essentially threatening that I'm in power. I'm going to stay in power because I've got F-15s. And if you right wing Americans want to fight, if you want to challenge us, we're just going to use F-15s and bomb you into the Stone Age, your own people. Then he gives this speech where he's threatening the MAGA Republicans flanked by these creepy. And, you know, during the whole speech, there's sirens going off constantly because Philly is just, a dangerous, very dangerous place, shall we say. Anyway, that's the climate that we're living in. That's the moment that we're living in. They are just going all out. They're doubling and tripling down on censorship, on secret police, on terrorism. We had an incident. I don't know if you saw this. There was a guy in eastern Pennsylvania, a town called Kintnersville, which is about 3 miles from where I was born and grew up till I was age 7. This guy is a Catholic, and he was an anti-abortion activist, and he was at an event at an abortion clinic protesting it, and there was this Jewish activist, he's a baby boomer, this Jewish activist, Stryker wrote about this on the NJP website, who basically was menacing his son, and the guy shoved him, gave him a little shove. His 12-year-old son, this Jew is menacing him, and this Jew is a real freak. He dresses in a dress and does all kinds of obnoxious activism. The FBI raided his home, one of these no-knock raids where they come with guns, his family screaming in terror. He had offered, he said, through his lawyer, that if there was a legal issue over this, I mean, it's basically simple assault. It's a misdemeanor assault. Over this, he has, through his lawyer, had said if they want to charge him, that he will turn himself in peacefully. So they didn't need to do this. It's pure intimidation. But this is what's going on in this country right now. And I'm sure, you know, the stories I see coming out of the UK, like, I don't monitor it closely, but the stuff I see, wasn't there just a boy, a child charged with terrorism? He was like a 12 or 13 year old kid, I think, for having like some edgy stuff.
Downloaded a book. And I just want to say this. I want to say this, right? There's some real bad faith actors that come out and say, oh, Mark, you regularly say they were arrested for just owning a book, but you never say don't own that book. Obviously and categorically, my advice to all nationalists, and as it always has been, is to engage in completely legal, above board, open community politics and community building. Stay away from the Fed posting groups. Already said that. Stay away from groups that are circulating any dodgy manifestos or manuals. And if you're on Telegram and you're in a group and there's somebody passing around something that you think could get you arrested if you downloaded that onto your phone or your computer, either leave the group or report the post. Do not download it and view that person as a Fed. There are people on Telegram every day that make it their life's work to say or do things that will get other people in the groups they are in arrested. Be aware of that. But you are right. Young lads now under the age of 16 in Britain are being arrested for downloading, a PDF of a
book, of a manifesto of some site. I mean, this is, how old was this kid? He was like, what, 13 or 14? And he's charged with terrorism? I mean, this is insane. And I saw the other, what was the other thing I saw? You know, like I said, Mark, on Telegram, occasionally these things get shared and I see them and I'm just flabbergasted. The other one was the police departments was talking about, how we can't allow like homophobic comments, but it was some kind of like sex abuse scandal or I forget what it was, but it was something like where they arrest someone for, some kind of horrible like homosexual abuse, and the police department issues a thing saying to shut down the comments on it, you know, to stop the comments on it. They're going to start investigating people for talking about it. But, So to bring it back to Putin, I don't know how anyone can at this stage, at the beginning of this war. Yes, I can see how people would look at both sides and say, OK, well, this is, you know, brother war, Ukrainians fighting Russians and all this. And there was a lot of stuff talk at that time that there are nationalists and national socialists, Azov battalion and this kind of thing that are fighting the Russians, being that Russia, even Jazz Hands, you know, he actually changed his position on this at the start of the war. We had a lot of big discussions about this because he was really saying that that Russia is like Zog East. And I was too. I mean, we were doing the research. We didn't.
I just want to back you up. I just want to say something here.
Yeah.
If you actually look at Russia, Russia's Jewish population under Putin has shrunk to its lowest level ever. They're all fleeing. And
yes. Yes.
Patrick Slattery was saying that the oligarchs, the formerly powerful Jewish oligarchs under Putin, one of four things has happened. A minority of them have towed the line and they are still there. Another group have sold up, fled and left. Another group are in prison. And the final group were basically killed. That's what Putin did to them.
Yeah.
And I've got to say this for Russian state media and for Russia's ban on Facebook, Instagram, and making it illegal to promote Facebook and Instagram and these mainstream social networks, Putin has smashed the primary means of the pushing vector, globo homo into the houses and homes of the Russian people. Whereas every British person is connected to globo homo via the flickering box in the corner of their screen, their phone in one hand, their tablet on the edge of the sofa, the laptop which is charging over on the kitchen table. In Russia now, you don't get that stuff. And I can, I'm going to say this categorically. What has destroyed the West more than anything? And I'm going to also say this, and this is going to be unpopular with some people. Communism in Eastern Europe was brutal, disgusting, horrific. But it was open. It was honest about what it was doing. And people could see who their enemies were. And the people who were subjugated under that communist rule, they emerged from it racially, ethnically, and morally intact and turned to nationalism. Communism was less damaging than Judeo-American Western liberal democracy, because that was sold to us as, this is good for you, this tastes good, take this plate and eat all you can from it, we're doing you a favor, but everything on that plate is poisoned, and over time it makes you sicker and sicker and sicker. And the people who embraced Judeo-American Western liberal democracy got sicker and sicker and sicker and more diseased, and are now racially, ethnically, and morally far worse off than those who lived behind the Iron Curtain. And yes, fundamentally, there's a couple of messages here. The first is, the enemy that you see in front of you, the enemy that is open about their intentions, is far less deadly than the enemy who comes to you as a friend. And secondly, open violence might look more brutal and damaging when you first see it, but subversive, mind-bending, liberal poison that strips you of your morality and sees you destroy yourself and prostitute yourself and harm yourself, that is far more damaging than an open physical attack.
Well, now they're doing both. Now they're doing both. Yeah. So a couple of quick points on that. One, to just finish what I was saying, Jazz and I had many discussions about this, and he wrote an article on Dissident Mag where he said why I changed my position on Russia. And he went through, and what happened was, at the start of the year, all the oligarchs, or half the oligarchs that we were pointing to in those episodes as like, don't trust Putin, Putin's no good, two thirds or three quarters of them are now gone. And Israel, you know, it's interesting also, Putin at one point in his speech, he mentioned Russia, China, and Iran. He put them all three in the same category. And I forget what the context was, but it was very interesting that he was lumped Iran in with China and Russia. Now, do I think Putin is a racial anti-Semite who's going hard on the Jews? No, I do not. But he's not blind. I mean, he's a realist also, and he's looking at what's happening, and there's a shift happening. There's a, you know, Jewry is coalescing around the one side to a larger extent than it was at the start of this war. We have to take that into account. But to what, to the other point that you made, that's the crazy thing about the West, Mark, is that, you know, I have a Hungarian friend who I talk about very frequently. He's in his 80s. He's a dear friend of mine who survived. He was a participant in the 1956 uprising against the Soviet Union, and he was forced to flee Hungary and come to the United States, say goodbye to his parents and his home, and was a, for the whole Cold War, was a staunch anti-communist, and his whole life was based around fighting against that. And he tells me how now it's like the positions have shifted. Now it's so bizarre for him, having grown up under this Russian Jewish tyranny of the system that was in place in Hungary until 1956. I mean, they had literally a Jewish dictator of Hungary that was a Soviet, a Stalinist. He says that now his position is reversed, and now he's looking to Russia as the savior of the Bolshevism coming out of the West. And the funny thing is that if you look at this system, what we have today, the big advantage that they sold us in the 1990s was, you know, when the Cold War was ended, it was like, okay, well, in the West, you may have degeneracy, you may have race mixing, you may have feminism, you may have all these disgusting things, promiscuity, pornography, you know, horrible music, horrible culture, cultural rot, cultural degeneration, consumerism, but at least people are materially well off. At least you have the comforts. It's easy to make money. It's easy to get laid. It's easy to have all these pleasures, the sort of materialistic pleasures that you get out of the system. Now that's gone. 20 years after this, or actually 30 years after the end of the Cold War, in this country anyway, right now we have inflation. It's so bad. I mean, everything, you know, you go to the grocery store and what 2 years ago you were able to get like a full cart full of groceries. Now you're getting like half that, it seems, for the same amount of money. You know, no one can get a decent job. No one can find a decent girl. No one can afford to get out of debt. No one can afford, I mean, people can't even afford, young people can't even afford to stop renting to buy their own home. I mean, that was the whole idea of the American dream, is you get, you know, blacks and gays and feminism and crap and shit and unhealthy burgers and all this, but you get at least cheap food, cheap this, cheap that. Now we don't even have that. And now the thing that you were just saying, we are getting the state terror. I mean, was that a cultural problem when this 13 or 14 year old was arrested and charged with terrorism? No, that's the state. That's the heavy hand of the state. 1984. You guys are dealing with it over there. It's funny. In some ways, it's worse over there. In some ways, it's worse over here, depending on. We have, I think, a higher proportion of just people living in terror in the cities because of the blacks that have been unleashed since 2020. Black crime is totally out of control in this country. They are killing white people. They are killing each other in record numbers. The FBI started even counting it. But it's like, if you cannot, and you can't defend yourself. This is the other thing, Mark. We have the right to bear arms here. But what we've seen with case after case is if a white guy uses his firearm that he's allowed to own to defend himself, to defend his property, to defend his girlfriend who's being assaulted by a black, he gets charged with hate crimes. He gets charged with terrorism. He gets locked up. Meanwhile, the black guys who commit the crimes get let off with a slap on the wrist. So they have switched from, if it used to be Brave New World, where they're selling us a version of the West that they control us through pleasure, through hedonism, through materialism and consumerism, and they warp our minds and distort our spiritually, culturally. Now, we still get that, but we also get, you know, the boot stamping on the human face, 1984 style, just open terror. And that's what so yeah, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from anybody that we need to back Zelensky and this Zog puppet regime in Ukraine that just about 90% of the Jew money and Jew power in the world is supporting. Forget it. I don't want to hear it.
I've got to just say, you're knocking it out of the park, but I'm going to say this. There is no country in Europe or in the world outside of Israel with more Jews in positions of absolute power than the Ukrainian regime.
Yes.
And people say, oh, the 2014 Maidan protests were nationalist protests. They were a CIA color revolution. And nationalists were used and armed as a battering ram to push that through against Russia. And as soon as it had been pushed through, you ended up with a Jewish prime minister, a Jewish president, a Jewish secretary of defense, and a Jewish chief of staff. And if anyone says that the Maidan protests were an expression of the Ukrainian people, well, if the expression of the Ukrainian people is that the four most important positions of the state in the Ukraine are occupied by people who aren't Ukrainian,
right?
I'm pressing X to doubt, because I don't believe that to be the case. And one other thing before you go on.
Yeah, sure.
I'll tell you this now, 110%, and I would put my life savings on it. I'd put all my Nintendo games on this. That's how sure of it I am, that if Zelensky and the Ukrainian regime is successful in defeating Putin, there will not be Azov parades through the street.
No.
There will not be old German flags and symbols adorning buildings. There will not be a nation that celebrates nationalism or ethnic Ukrainians. There'll be gay pride parades, trans kids, open door mass immigration from the third world, and there will be every ill and poison that has been pushed on the British or the American people pumped into the Ukraine, but at a faster rate than we ever saw it in the West.
Yes.
That is a fact. People fighting for the Ukraine are not fighting for the Ukrainian people, whether they believe they are or not. They are basically fighting for those Judeo-American Western liberal values and everything, everything that they bring. And I'll tell you this now, even if Azov became the most effective fighting unit in the world and repelled the Russian forces by themselves, I still believe Zelensky and America would do away with them the minute the conflict was over.
Yes, absolutely. And what I said months ago is what they'll do is if there were any war crimes committed on the Ukrainian side, they'll pin it on Azov and they'll pin it on the nationalists, so-called, and they'll put them up and try them to show that, see, we're cleaning up our war criminals. I mean, you're absolutely right. I agree with everything you just said. And I will say this also. You know, I was talking to I went to Walmart recently, and there was an old lady that was in the checkout line, and we had a little conversation about the skyrocketing price of everything here right now, the inflation. And I said, I don't know what we're doing messing around over there in Ukraine right now, because Biden's been just pumping so much money into this war. And it's interesting, because she was a Trump supporter, but she said, yeah, what are they doing for us? That's what she said. And it was a very interesting thing, because it's like, this is a basic point. I mean, even if the fight in Ukraine was not just a completely Zog-backed Jewish thing, it's hard to say that, because it's like, there's no way this would be happening if it wasn't. But as a nationalist, as a white nationalist, especially living in the United States, my enemy is this horrible, evil system that is just out to get me, out to get my whole people in America, and has been for years, has been just systematically for years, for decades, has taken our cities away from us, for instance. I gave a big speech about this last April, how back when World War II happened, cities like Detroit were still like 90% white. Now they're like 10% white. I mean, whites were pushed out, were ethnically cleansed from all the major cities, Chicago, Detroit, all the Midwest, and including in the Northeast and the South even. We just had in Memphis, Tennessee, there were a couple of horrific killings of white women. There was a nurse who was just gunned down randomly by this psychotic black who was running around shooting people. She was shot in front of her daughter, her teenage daughter, and the three kids are now orphans because their father had died a few years ago. And there, at the same week, there was another woman who was an heiress of a billionaire family, actually, who was out jogging and was grabbed by this psychotic black and dragged into the van and beaten to death and left for dead. Horrific crimes. And Memphis, we Mike and I talked to a guy who's a Memphis native, who's a boomer, who's from Memphis. We had him on our show, and he was talking about how Memphis was when he was growing up, what a nice city it was, and how it was majority white back in the 50s. So these people have like ethnically cleansed whites from our own cities that our grandfathers built all over the United States. So my point is this. I mean, I'm sorry to sound this way, and this isn't, you know, you have to factor all this in, but as a white nationalist in America and as an American nationalist, like, what the hell why would I want to see the Biden regime successful in Ukraine, even if it benefited Ukrainian nationalists? You see what I'm saying? In other words, I'm not diminishing that. Like, if Ukraine was led by a sincere Ukrainian patriot and not a Jewish junta, then I would at least couch my language differently. I would say that this is something that is, we, unfortunate, it's tragic. We have to sort of follow their struggle with respect. I cannot follow this struggle with respect if it is being led and backed by a Jewish junta, which it is. But what I'm saying is, even if that were the case, my country is being taken away from me as a white American. Your country as a white Briton is being taken away from you. And you have a much older country than we do, and it's being taken away from you. So our interests as nationalists, you want to make the appeal as nationalists, you know, it doesn't matter what Putin's ideology is or what he personally believes about this or that, his private opinions. I don't care. I have to get this horrible Zog system off my throat, off the throat of my people. And if that means that, I'm rooting for Zog to lose in Ukraine, even if it were bad for Ukrainian nationalists, that would be the position I would have to take. I can't sacrifice my own American people, 200 million white people. I can't sacrifice their interests as a people for the interests of Ukrainians or anybody else. I can't do that. I can't do that. And that's the nationalist position. I mean, as nationalists, you know, it's funny, Mark, we're in two different countries. We're talking across a huge ocean is between us right now. And there's a lot of common points in the NJP and Patriotic Alternative. We have a lot in common, but there might be issues. There might be issues where you have to take a different position than I do because I'm living in the United States and you're living in the UK. And that's fine. That's fine. Nationalism doesn't, it's not an internationalist universalist ideology where we all believe the same thing and should apply to everyone. One size fits all. We have to do what's in our interest for our people in our countries. So yeah, that's even more retarded. The idea that for the sake of nationalism, you have to make common cause with the so-called nationalism in Ukraine for the sake, the greater good of the cause of nationalism internationally. I mean, how does it help me as an American white nationalist to support so-called nationalism in Ukraine if all that does, if the victory of that in Ukraine just strengthens the oppressive regime killing my people here? I want to see this regime fall. You know, I'll give you one more point on that. Otto Ernst Rehmer, if you know who that is, Otto Ernst Rehmer, for anybody who doesn't know, he was a Wehrmacht officer who was very famous for in the so-called Valkyrie, you know, when Stauffenberg and the July bomb plot in 1944, when they tried to kill Hitler. Rehmer is very famous because he refused to go along with the plotters. He was in Berlin at the time, and he was instructed by the plotters, hey, Hitler is dead. We need to shut down Goebbels and all these guys. They plotted against Hitler. They murdered Hitler, and we need to have them all arrested. And he was given that order. And he was like, that's bullshit. This sounds fishy. And he went and did the opposite. He went to Goebbels, told him what was going on. Goebbels got Hitler on the phone. Hitler said, you know, Colonel Rehmer, do you recognize my voice? He says, I give you authority. Clean up the enemy here in Berlin. So he put down that coup attempt. And then went on, had a very honorable service record. After the war, Rehmer didn't stop fighting. He continued to fight, and he had an organization called the Socialist Reich Party that was really a successor to the NSDAP. And it was banned by the German government along with the NSDAP. It's one of the only, I think it's the only other party that is specifically banned in the German government by name. But the Socialist Reich Party was a West German operation. And they were not focused. People accuse them of taking money from the Eastern blocs. And I'm not saying we are doing that or need to be doing that. But what I'm saying is that if you're Otto Rehmer in West Germany and you fought the Soviets for years, I mean, you know Soviet terror and Stalinism like nobody else. But if you're in West Germany with a political party in West Germany in the year 1950 or 1948, you got to look at the reality. The world is broken up into two parts, and that's why all over the world, like Castro in Cuba or Nasser in Egypt, had to pick sides, and it depended on who was the boot on their throat. So if you're a Hungarian and you've got that Jewish Stalinist regime crushing you in Hungary, you're going to be all about Radio Free Europe and the West and the U.S. That's geopolitics. But if you're in West Germany, you're going to be more, you know, taking the line that is coming out of the East, because that's your interest as a German in the West. That doesn't mean you support communism or, you know, if your goal is to free Germany as a whole, but you're in West Germany, you got to look to what the line coming out of the East is. If you're in the East, you got to look what your line is coming out of the West. My point is, it's just basic geopolitics. This is just geopolitics. If a man like Otto Ernst Rehmer could find himself in that position, then, you know, how can any nationalist in the West look at what's happening right now and not say, if we're in Western Europe or if we're in the United States, we got to be rooting for Putin, man. We got to hope that he is successful to drive them out and defeat NATO in this, because it will weaken them. And if they are weak, it'll help us.
I think that is some very, very good geopolitical thinking. And that is also something that I hold to. And again, you can hope. This is the big problem around nationalism. I don't want to get too bogged down in this, but there are people within nationalism that either that push one of two ridiculous points. The first is that if you want somebody to do well for a specific reason, or if you temporarily say this is the lesser of two evils, you're automatically that person's biggest fan and you're shilling for them and you're in on their pay. That isn't true. And there's another, I think, just as damaging or even more damaging mindset that sweeps through both nationalism and also what I sort of mockingly call the truther movement. And when I say mockingly, I mean the truther movement that thinks there's a Metal Gear Solid nanobots in the jabs, but doesn't think there's any ethnic group dominating Hollywood, you know? So, you know, we're all gonna be eaten alive from the inside by these highly sophisticated nano machines. But if you say to these same people, what about you know, all the Steins and Bergs running Hollywood, they run a mile and refuse to talk about it. But this other very damaging mindset is that everything in the world is controlled. Everything in the world is all some kind of pageantry, that the war in the Ukraine is pageantry, that there isn't even really a war there, that Putin and Biden meet behind closed doors, they drink champagne, they eat caviar and they laugh and they say, ha ha ha, we're, you know, both the same side of, you know, everything. We agree on everything secretly, but all of this is some kind of facade because of a distraction or something like that. I think that's complete nonsense. I think that's just rubbish. I do think there are different geopolitical forces on the planet who have their own distinct interests, form alliances, and make decisions independently. But I also think that the people pushing that are the worst of the worst. They are the despair mongers. Because if everything all was controlled and everybody was really on the same side and they were all doing this for a distraction, not that they'd need to distract anyone because everyone's already got football and X Factor and Facebook, right, and Instagram and all the bread and circuses they could want. You know, you wouldn't need a war to distract people from anything. You know, there's, right, enough crap on the TV to distract us for 10 lifetimes. But the point is, this despair mongering that everything is so controlled and it's all just, you know, and that Putin and Biden are exactly the same and there aren't any geopolitical forces, that's despair mongering. Because you know what it means? It means that we're screwed.
It's defeatism. Defeatism is.
And you know what it means? It means, yeah, sit on your ass,
yeah,
on Telegram, behind a fake name, endlessly posting about how terrible things are. But because it's all controlled, because it's all so controlled, you're basically living in a political version of the Truman Show, that you might as well just, you know, just cash out, play some more video games, you know, drink some more beer and, yeah, and enjoy it before you pop your clogs. And that's not my game plan. My game plan is to fight, to beat this tyrannical anti-white system and set our people free. And the only way we're going to do that is when something comes along like this earth-shattering speech that we say to our people, hey, watch this. You don't have to live under this tyranny where you're looking over your shoulder, messing your pants because you came out with some absolute truth, such as men are men and women are women, right, and there's, yeah, mummies and daddies, not, right, parent A and parent B, because there's huge swathes of the world that don't live under that tyranny, and you know what? They're speaking out about it.
Yeah.
That is where we need to be. And that doesn't make me a shill, and it doesn't make me someone who doesn't understand.
This, the people saying this are, I think, very often the shills. I mean, that's the danger. And, you know, you don't want to accuse people of this, but I think that it's one of these things that, like, there's a lot of money going around. There's a lot of people, influencers out there. There's a lot of anonymous influencers. I mean, you know, we know that intelligence agencies, the CIA, for instance, is involved in seeding certain narratives around the world to help them with. I mean, it's what they're most effective at. I mean, it's what the United States, probably its most powerful tool in its entire arsenal, has not been its nuclear power or even its air power. It's been its cultural power, Hollywood, propaganda, and the CIA, the ability to set the narratives, the ability to change set the tone, set the terms that people see a conflict in, what's good, what's evil, who's right, who's wrong. And some of that is disinformation. Some of it is seeding doubt and defeatism. But no, at this point, I just, I feel like the shill calls you a shill as he is taking money to do the opposite. You know what I mean? I'm trying to do like a variant of he cries out.
The shill calls you a shill as he's shilling.
Yeah, exactly. Like an honest person who just stands up, who is not, you know, is not like a Russian fifth columnist, but is just, again, analyzing the situation objectively from our own interests. And they are accusing you of that, or they're accusing you of, oh, you're working for this, you're taking money from the Russians or something. It's like, I don't know. That maybe is the person that you need to think about is more likely than not taking money from someone who has an interest in the Ukraine side, you know, in backing the Ukrainian regime. And we never think that way. You know, we immediately deny and say, that's not true, or I'm not Putin's biggest fan. But what about, why don't we just put the fix on the other side? Like, why are you backing Zelensky? Why are you backing Biden?
Why are you Biden's biggest fan?
Yeah. Who is paying you to say that? Or if you're not getting paid to say that, you are the dupe of someone who is getting paid to influence you in that way. You know what I mean? Because there's you're either a bad actor, or you are the fool, the dupe of bad actors. You know, there's no third possibility. I mean, you're one of those two things, really. You're either being fooled and duped and you're an idiot, or you're actually a bad actor and you're a paid agent of something, you know, or you have an interest in it. There's some sort of hidden agenda here, this hidden interest. So that's the other thing, Mark, is you especially, the reason, and you and I were talking about this a little privately earlier this week, but I, you know, you are out there. This isn't 2016 anymore. This isn't 2016 anymore, where, and this is something that in general, I just have to say, what we're doing with the National Justice Party, I said this on a recent show with Jazz Hands. I said, you don't have to agree with what we're doing. You don't have to like what we're doing. You don't have to think that what we're doing is going to work. But if you don't think it's going to work, don't tell me why it's not going to work. Show me what will work. Show me what will work. Show me what will work. Don't tell me what's not going to work. And this gets back to the defeatists. And what I have to say about you and Mike, particularly, when I think of you, the two of you, you both head up large organizations that are struggling under unbelievable amounts of oppression that most people, in even in dissident circles, can't even imagine the level of oppression and the level of just petty harassment that these organizations have to deal with. You guys, like the NJP, Patriotic Alternative, you're out there in the streets, you're doing activism, you're taking on risks. You know, you've got people in offices, in government offices, burning the candle at both ends, trying to find ways that they can get you, lock you up, take you away from your family, and put you behind bars for your legal political advocacy. And we've got the same thing. I mean, it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up when I think of people in the government looking at me, looking at my comrades. We're out there doing, exercising our First Amendment rights, free speech, free assembly, and you have people thinking of ways to try to trip us up, get us, convict us on terrorism, some fake thing, and lock us up, take us away from our families, and put us behind bars. So we're facing all these risks. We're out there talking to the real people. And I'll tell you what is why I say it's not 2016 anymore. The movement has moved beyond this phase where we're all just talking heads on the internet with YouTube subscribers. We're hiding behind, you know, fake names. I mean, and again, not everyone can come out there under their own face and name. That's my disclaimer. There are plenty of people who are not out there, who are not doxxed, and they're doing tremendous good work by being on the internet, not doxxed yet. However, to those of us who are, and those of us involved with an organization like the NJP or Patriotic Alternative, I don't want to hear it from someone that's an intellectual or a so-called philosopher, you know, Bronze Age pervert got on there. Who the hell is that guy? He got on there attacking Greg Conte's speech against the FBI on Twitter. And it's like people like that, or figures like Jordan Peterson, you know, and then figures that are a little closer to us, you know, that are in used to be in the same milieu as us. It's like we're past 2016, 2015, 2017, even. We're past the age where it's all about subscriber counts, where it's all about having an edgy hot take or having a different take, or it's about, you know, satisfying some international audience. That's the other thing, is that I'm not interested in appeasing the consensus of nationalists around the world on the internet. I'm interested in reaching the masses of Americans. I want to reach the common man in this country. And that's, you guys have been doing it very effectively with your demonstration. I see Sam out there, you know, doing this stuff in the streets. So I don't want to hear it from people who are just on the internet or just in international circles or intellectual circles. I don't want to hear the critiques. I want, show me, come here, get out there in the street, organize the people yourself. That's one thing I'll say for Nick Fuentes and the Groypers. You know, we've had a lot of negative things to say about them, but at least they had their own thing. They were going out there doing things. Go out there and do your own thing if you don't agree with the way we're doing it, and show me why your thing will work and our thing won't work. But don't sit on the internet behind some, on a Telegram or whatever, criticizing and posting defeatism and telling us, you know, this tinfoil hat bullshit. I totally agree with everything you said.
Well, thank you, my friend. Let's do some super chats. Before we do, I just want to make a very quick point. To anyone watching this, taking this out of context and saying, what does Mark want? The whole of Europe to be under Russian rule? No, I don't. I want Europe to throw off the shackles of Judeo-American rule, and I want an independent Germany. I want an independent Britain. I want an independent France. Yes. And the way I see it today is that a Russian victory in Ukraine, and by the way, that isn't a destruction of the Ukraine. It's just the annexation of lands which have, since the beginning of time, had Russian people living on them, would be a blow to NATO, which would be a step closer to Europe being free. And I'll tell you this as well. I think that people could sit around a table with Putin, and I think they could find common ground. I think Marine Le Pen could find common ground with Putin. I think Viktor Orban could find common ground with Putin. I think the Italian right wing could find common ground with Putin. I don't think any of those groups could find any common ground with Biden or with Liz Truss or with any of these liberal Western leaders. And that also tells you something very important. Somebody doesn't have to see completely eye to eye with you or be your best friend or be your ideological bedmate to have common ground. And what I found out from this is Putin may not be an ethno-nationalist, but I have more common ground with him than I do Liz Truss. Yes. And I can tell you this now, if my daughter was being brought up in Russia, she would be far safer in a Russian school than she would in a British school. Yeah. Anyway, let's do some of these super chats. Thank you to everyone who's donated so generously tonight. There is still 50 minutes of the show left. We're going to try and fire through these. I'm going to obviously let Warren do most of the speaking. He's been absolutely phenomenal tonight. Glenn the Chinaman gave $3. Thank you so much. So, Mark, are you ready for an exceptionally cold winter in Great Britain this year? Japan also went along with Russian sanctions and banned Russian energy imports. Another vassal state of America there paying for its friendship with its greatest ally. He says it will be a harsh winter Down with the Great Satan. I hope it's been seasonally unwarm here so far. Touch wood. I'm hoping not to jinx it. We'll be playing a game in the Collett house. It's called How Long Can We Not Have the Heating On For? So if you see me on the next episode of PWR with two coats and a scarf, you'll know why. Runt's Meadow gave £10 and said, was Bernard Manning our guy? Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure. He was quite funny, though. But yeah, a normal straight talking guy. And I think he probably espoused the same things behind closed doors as we do. Glenn the Chinaman gave another $5. Thank you so much. And said, does this conflict between Indians and Pakistanis in Great Britain reveal the flaw of viewing everyone outside Europe as a homogenous race? In South Asia, where were converts from the both castes, this conflict was long before the British Raj and exists long after. One thing I will say is there's a really... And this is another reason why I like NJP. And it's because, fundamentally, when I look at the world, I don't see this as a struggle between whites and non-whites. Now, that's sort of grug nationalism. Grug nationalism is me be white, they not be white, they enemy, me friend. That's not how it works. There are lots of people from different cultures, different racial groups, different ethnicities that I have respect for a variety of reasons. And it is also fundamentally very foolish to see all non-whites as natural allies. Even to see different Muslim groups as brothers is false, because the Sunni and the Shiites will kill each other all day long if given the chance. That's just a fact. And what we're seeing in Leicester and parts of Britain now is a brutal battle between Hindus and Muslims that is ages old, that's been imported from, the Indian subcontinent, and it existed long before even the British Empire, even before British India existed. So I don't see all different non-Europeans as one amorphous group, and nationalists who do and just see them as one big non-white group that all have their same all aligned in some way, that's nonsense. So thank you for that. Glenn the Chinaman also gave $5. Thank you so much. And he said, and this one's for Warren, he said, I heard it mentioned on Fash the Nation that there is a desire for Russia to be 100% Russian. Is the podcast recommending Russia cut off territories, the Caucasus and Siberia, for example? Most natural resources are where the Caucasians, Siberians and Turkic people live. Before Warren answers that, I just want to say something very important. People who say that Russia is a multicultural nation need to understand Russia is the largest country in the world, and it is by its nature multicultural, but so are the British Isles multicultural. British Isles are naturally multicultural. They take in England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. There are four distinct ethnic groups there with their own cultures, languages and ways of life. In Russia, there is a natural multiculturalism. There are Russians living there. There are Chechens. There are Tatars. There are Cossacks. And there are people from states like Dagestan who have been living there for generations. The multiculturalism that people like myself and Warren rage against is the unnatural state-enforced multiculturalism of importing people from the third world into your country, your cities, your towns to replace us. And if you look at the census in Russia in 1926, ethnic Russians made up around 78-79% of the Russian population. And in their last census in 2010, ethnic Russians made up around 78-80% of the population. Now, it is a multi-ethnic country due to its size, but ethnic Russians haven't been on the decline. Whereas in Britain, white Britons, the indigenous population, have gone from being around 99.95% majority in 1926 to around 80% today, which is a massive drop-off in 100 years, whereas the ethnic Russians in Russia have been slightly up and down, but largely stable over the last 100-year period. So the multiculturalism of Russia is completely different and in many ways natural, like the natural multiculturalism of Britain. What I oppose is state-enforced multiculturalism pulled from places that have nothing in common with us and no claim to our lands. Anyway, what do you say about that, Warren?
Oh, I mean, I don't really have anything to add to that. I think what Glenn is probably referring to is a statement Jazz Hands said where he wished Putin was just more, you know, more of a Russian nationalist for the Russian, the ethnic Russian people. But I think, you know, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Okay, well, what about then the people who are not ethnically Russian, you know? But I mean, what you said is really gets to the heart of the matter there, Mark. I mean, it's that's not, I don't think that's what Jazz Hands was saying. You'd have to ask him.
Okay, thank you. VM gave $3. Thank you so much. She said, curious to know the history of Warren's father's party. How come it dissolved? And what does NJP plan to do differently to avoid the same fate?
If he's talking about the National Socialist White People's Party, which was Rockwell's organization post-Rockwell, many different things. I mean, the National Justice Party, you know, the NSWPP had its period there in the tumultuous in the 1970s. And it was a different time. There were different problems that America was facing at that time. And there were different ways of getting your message out there. You know, one thing, I mean, I'll just give one example that would, you know, that would take up the rest of our time to go through all that. But to give one example, George Lincoln Rockwell, his whole strategy was in a time before there was the internet, before there was all these ways you can reach people besides just getting on the news. So Rockwell had to do a lot of flamboyant, you know, he was an advertising man. He was a man who had a background in that. And he knew that you have to make a very sort of colorful spectacle in order to even get on the news, to break through the media blackout. You have to kind of almost play up the sort of caricature of a Nazi that he would do sometimes. But then you would see when he ran for governor of Virginia, he put on a suit and tie. He was not, you know, with swastikas and armbands and brown shirts and all that. When he was agitating, and Rockwell spoke about this, when he was agitating, he would take that strategy, that approach. Now, that's something that's not shocking in America anymore. People have had decades of people dressing up in costumes and flying swastika flags. So it's not something that automatically gets you recognition or headlines. It's just an accepted thing that there are certain people who do that. The NJP, you know, we don't want to do that because we want people to take our ideas seriously, and we don't want our style to be an impediment to that. You know, I mean, it's the same reason why we're not out there speaking German, is because, you know, it might be more authentically National Socialist to go and speak German. But if an American who only speaks English hears you speaking in German and he doesn't understand what you're saying, then you have a communications breakdown. So if we went out there in brown shirts and flying the swastika as they did back in the 70s, it would not help people understand what we're saying. It would actually lead to a breakdown in communication because they would assume we're doing a certain thing that Americans are just, you know, have a certain idea of. So we're taking a different approach for a different time, and it's all about, I think Rockwell would take the approach we're taking today if he were around. I think he would find ways to reach the people. You know, that's what it's all about. Get the idea in your head across to the people you're trying to reach.
Yeah, and you've got to remember that effective pageantry is something that should always be employed. Look at those massive White Lives Matter banner drops that our Scottish lads did at the top of Ben Nevis that went, you know, made news the world over. And we've been pushing that now for 3 years. And finally, you've got Kanye West coming out in a White Lives Matter shirt. And it's the talk of the town. And if you push things hard enough, you can influence the mainstream. And I'm not saying that I have personally like spoken to Kanye or made him do this, but anybody who looks at the news could not have failed to see one of our banner drops, because they were covered by Russia Today. They were covered by American outlets. They were covered by British outlets. We flew the plane over the Etihad Stadium with White Minority by 2066 on it. All of that pageantry works. Rockwell used pageantry, and it might not have been optical pageantry, but it got him noticed back then. Right. Politics is part of the art of politics is being the people or being the group that is noticed amongst the crowd. Glenn the Chinaman said, gave another $10. Thank you for being so generous tonight, my friend. He said, you hear about the white baby boom that is going on in the US and in some countries in Europe. Urban areas are down and rural areas are up. Non-Hispanic whites and Hispanic whites are the only groups that increase fertility. Rural baby boom continues this year and whites could surpass all races except Hispanics as the most fertile. Look, I'll tell you this. If you live a natural life and you're not materialistic, you want to have kids. I spent the afternoon with my little girl, and I can tell you this, the best times you have as a parent or as a human being are with your children. They're wonderful. And these rural families, they have children and they realize that's wonderful. And these people who are less in touch with the natural world, who live in cities, who are just like, I go to work, I punch in, I work all day, I punch out, I go home, I sit in my pod, I eat my Chinese from a little cardboard wrapper, and then I open my Amazon packages and play with my toys all night. Those people are not the ones that are going to be having children, but ultimately they're the ones that will be dying unfulfilled. And I think it's good that rural whites, traditionalist whites, are having kids because, you know, ultimately the people who have children, they're the ones whose genetics goes on to inherit the world.
Well, I wanted to quickly just add to that, that Stryker, Joe Jordan put out a thing about it that it shows that this boom happened during COVID. And what he said and what the NJP party platform includes is we want to pay white mothers to have children, pay them to stay home and have children. This is what the Third Reich did. This is what Viktor Orban is doing right now in Hungary. And it's turning things around slowly. I mean, it's kind of been a mixed result and there's a lot of other factors to it. But, you know, that's good news. I just, you know, that the people running this country, when they see data like that, they have the opposite reaction. They think, oh, no, we got to get on top of that. We got to fix that. I will say, you know, there's a great channel on Telegram. It's run by a friend of mine called The White Papers. And he does a lot of reporting on what's going on in Europe, European elections. And he did a great write-up of what just recently happened with the Tories. But he also put out a thing recently that I've been thinking about, that the rate of suicide in the United States, the numbers on it, I think 70% of the suicides, suicides are very high in the U.S. And I think 70% of suicides are white men. So we have to look at the birth rate also, but also the death rate, you know, I'm sure that's what Biden and the people behind Biden, the Jews who run this system, the George Soroses are looking at. They're like, oh, crap. You know, if COVID giving these people money and shutting things down led to an increase in the white birth rate, well, that's not good. Maybe if we can't slow that down, maybe we can speed up the white death rate, because that's how they think. That's how these ghouls think. That's why that Jew was out there at the abortion clinic. I mean, what kind of a freak goes to an abortion clinic to be in favor of abortion? I mean, women coming in there, he's out there clamoring for more abortions. It's like it's an absolute ghoul who's bent on white genocide. So yeah, but no, it's a good point, Glenn, and it's good news to hear. I mean, hopefully it's not just a blip, but hopefully it's a trend that will continue.
I agree. Arcade Outpost gave $10. Thank you so much. And said, always great to see Warren on. Thank you both. Thank you very much. Aunt Sally gave £3. Thank you very much. And said, £3 weekly is a drop in the ocean to help support what you do. Thank you very much. Well, thank you so much, Aunt Sally. And that's what I say. I'm not asking for people's life savings. I'm not sending out begging letters asking for hundreds or thousands of pounds. But £3 a week from the thousands of people that watch would actually turn this into a movement that could make real change. Olivia 1971 gave £10. Thank you so much, my dear. Always very generous. And she says, looking forward to the show. Many thanks. Well, thank you. Red Line gave $14. Thank you so much. She said, happy birthday, Mark. You're a modern day hero. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Serena JB gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, why are some nationalists on the side of the globalist West in the Ukraine war? Obviously, there is a distinction between the people of the West and the Ukraine and their globalist rulers. Fantastic guest. Warren is one of my favorites. Well, thank you so much. Do you know what? I think there are people out there who are supporting Azov simply because of the symbolry they use. I think that's it.
Like I said, it's there's people who are paid bad actors, and then there's dupes and fools, and that, those are the two categories. I mean, that's we answered that question already. In my opinion, that's the answer to that question. Why are people supporting it? Either they are the ones that are the shills, they are the ones getting paid, or influenced by people who are paid, or they're just they're foolish and they're dupes. And they don't see what this is going to like I said, the easiest way, well, you said it actually, Mark, the best way to prove our point, sadly, is if Zelensky wins, then we will all get to see what all this sacrifice, all these guys getting blown to bits, fighting on the side of Biden and Kamala, nationalists, you get to see what kind of country that they purchase with their blood if Zelensky is successful.
You know that meme where there's those guys in the boats about to storm up the Normandy beaches against the German troops, and then there's those like bubbles above their head saying, "I'm doing it for like gay marriage," or "I'm doing it for my trans granddaughter." Yeah,
and Murdoch did that. D-Day.
Yes. I always say, if those guys knew, if in 1940, if in 1940, you know, I could sort of project a vision of the future of Britain into the skies of Britain and show everyone what Britain's involvement in the war would lead to for Britain, I honestly don't believe anybody would have fought against the Germans. However, at that time, and this is why I have sympathy for the British troops and the American troops who fought against the Germans, they didn't know what hell was coming.
No.
They didn't know things were going to turn out this. And what I don't understand about the Ukraine is how anyone could go and fight for the Ukraine knowing what has happened to every country that has either been conquered by America or has become a vassal state of America. Because if you're a nationalist and you know anything about history, you know what a Judeo-American victory means for the country that has either been conquered or taken America on as its new master. So how these so-called nationalists or national socialists are taking up arms for the Biden regime is beyond me, because they're not like the guys in the D-Day ships. They know...
We know better.
N-word Furlong gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, "Hi, Warren. Would you be able to appear on the Ayatollah's Friday night dinner stream? Also, what do you make of the work of Andrew Joyce?"
As far as the Ayatollah, he and I have communicated back and forth. Friday is usually a bad day for me, but I think he offered to get me on a different day. I need to get back to him, actually. This summer has been the busiest we've had in a long time, both personally and politically. So it's been very hard for me to. If you're listening to this, I apologize. I will get back to you, and eventually I will get on your stream. This winter will be especially more quiet. And Andrew Joyce is amazing. His writings are phenomenal. Highest respect.
Thank you. Overton Window Publishing gave £14. Thank you so much. A great show and a belated happy birthday, Mark. Thank you so much. Overton Window Publishing is actually making a board game, and he's promoting this here. It's called 2066, The Race Against Time. It's a new anti-globalist board game, and his website is overtonwindowpublishing.co.uk, or check out the adverts on Odyssey. So this guy has sent me some pictures of this. It looks really good. He's gone to quite a lot of... time and effort making this. It's very professionally produced. It looks really good. If you're looking for a red-pilled Christmas present, this looks like it is. And if you do buy it and have a few games, I wouldn't actually mind somebody coming and doing a review of it for us, because it looks...
Isn't this a good time for Americans to buy because of the exchange rate? It's a good
time
to buy.
Yeah, you could buy like 10 of these.
I'm actually, you know what I was looking at? I'm going to geek out with you for a second here. I used to be into Warhammer Games Workshop when I was younger. And now, thinking of my son, because I've been getting so much into Napoleonic warfare, there's a company called Perry Miniatures that Alan and Michael, I think Perry, used to be the sculptors for the Empire figures and the Imperial Guard in Warhammer 40K. So they did very lifelike little human. Anyway, they have their own independent company, and they've done ranges of all these historical figures. And, you know, I mean, just incredible European history, the War of the Roses, the Crusades, the Zulu War, a lot of stuff from the British perspective. but they've done an amazing range of Napoleonic figures. And if I ever get the time, I don't know when the hell I'll be able to do it, but my dream is I want to teach my, when he's old enough, I want to teach my son history by being able to war game with him some of these historical wars, you know, like the Napoleonic Wars. And I was just last night, late at night on my phone, after Emily and I finished, I'm looking at perryminiatures.com and I'm looking at the prices and I'm doing the math in my head and I'm like, damn, I wish I had a few, a little extra money right now, because this would be a really good time to buy these from the UK.
Well, I've got to say, I'm more of a fan of Space Marines than I am historical miniatures. But I just remember the crushing feeling of spending hours and hours painting that one perfect miniature and you thinking you've got it perfect. And then you compare it again to what was in the magazine and you're like,
I never got much past the primer stage. I have somewhere in boxes, I have hundreds of primed figures, and I painted up successfully like three or four of them. So if I didn't have time back then, you know, I don't know how the hell today I would ever find time to do it. But it's a long-term project. My son is very young. He's still in diapers. So it would be more of a thing that would over, if I can do it over the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I think if we win the glorious battle, I might retire to a painting den somewhere with some Space Marines. Red Lion gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, Warren made a very important point. The reason why our governments have turned on their own people with immigration, outsourcing of jobs and censorship is the fact that the fall of the Soviet Union, there has been no alternatives to the West. That's a very good point, and Warren already made it. Max Anderson gave £3. Said, great show. Thank you so much. Stas Nikiforov gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, Mark, as a regular Russian listener, I fully support your honest message. You and Warren, Patriotic Alternative and National Justice Party, do a great job to spread the truth in the West. Thank you so much, my friend. Sam Melia gave £10. Thank you so much, Sam. He said, absolute tour de force between Warren and Mark tonight, two titans of the movement. Thank you.
Salute to Sam. He's been doing amazing work out there.
Yeah, I got to say, that thing where Sam and his team like made their way into that that ancient tower in York and did the banner drops down the side, that was like the A team. Like the A team do things like that. That was just with all the radios. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And Jez gave £10. Thank you so much, my friend. And he said, belated happy birthday. Can't disagree with any of your Russian analysis. Thank you so much, Jez. That's very, very kind of you. Redline gave $5 and he said, great show, guys. Thank you so much. Dominic Kennedy gave £10 and he said, hiya, Marky C and Warren E. B. What are PA and the NJP doing to mark Black History Month? And don't say nothing, or you're both big racists. Love you lots, Dommy K. Kiss, kiss. He's obviously making fun of Dominic Kennedy, the journalist who's been doing hit pieces on PA. We shall mark Black History Month by producing the best white positive shows we've ever produced. And Dominic Kennedy gave another £10. Thank you so much. And he said the same thing again. Well, thank you for the £10. Crispy Bacon gave £10. Thank you so much. Ellie Bree gave £3. Thank you very much. And said, have a great birthday. Have a Red Bull on me. Great guest. Thank you so much. I will. Mark Donovan gave £5. Thank you so much. And he said, a Black History Month could be condensed into 24 hours and still contain repetition. Thank you very much. The Flying Dutchman gave $25. Thank you so much. Said, Mark, what is your opinion on the current and future state of the UK economy? I will do it in plain format. So looking shaky, gonna get worse. The fact is, there was so many structural failings that have been built into the UK economy over decades and decades of government mismanagement. And these were all brought to a head rather spectacularly during the COVID lockdowns. And what we've seen post that is just everything coming to a head, and it's only going to get worse. And as people have less money and are more panicked about the energy crisis, they'll be spending less. And the less they spend, the more the politicians' mantra and dream of endless economic growth will grind to a halt. Then you'll see recession and what any normal and healthy economy would see as a natural boom and bust cycle that could be dealt with will be seen as the end of the world and lead to some kind of immense spiral that leads to even greater hardship for the British people. And my only lasting regret about these recessions is it's the normal people that are hurt by it, not the globalist monsters who are so rich that despite creating this mess, never suffer because of it. So thank you. Cheesy Watsit gave $70. Thank you so much for your generosity. He said, what do you think of the recent Twitter spat between Elon Musk and Zelensky? Well, Elon Musk said to Zelensky that he should absolutely just concede, sue for peace, and basically allow the Russians to have the land that contains Russian speakers and ethnic Russians. So I think Musk often says things that are very, very intelligent. And I don't actually think he's political in the sense of partisan. I think he just says sensible things that pop into his head and then watches the world explode in a fit of madness because he said them. What do you think, Warren?
I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with Elon Musk right now. And lately I've been on the more on the hate than the love side. I mean, it's interesting. But I think collectively a lot of us in this movement have sort of PTSD with figures like Trump, as far as when someone starts signaling in our direction that they might do, like hit that whole tease with Twitter that he's going to buy Twitter or he's going to free it all up and then he's not and everything. There's been a much more positive development recently that there was a law passed in Texas, a social media law that said that you can't kick people off social media for their political views. And this is going to go to the Supreme Court. And I have more faith in that angle than I do in some sort of eccentric billionaire that, you know, he's in a good mood today, so he's going to give us our free speech rights. And then he's not in a good mood. Now he's going to take them away again. I'm just sick of figures like him, Trump, Tucker Carlson. I didn't see the exact spat with Zelensky. Zelensky, though, has no reason to quit. I mean, he's going to fight to the last drop of Ukrainian blood and to the last American dollar. You know, like he has zero incentive. That's the other thing. If you know, Mark, we're not going through we don't have time to go through Putin's whole speech, but I did it with Jazz Hands so people can go fascination, the right stuff.
Yeah, and support these guys. I'm telling you, watch their shows. They're amazing.
And if you want to become a contributor to the NJP, also on the National Justice Party website, we built in a TRS subscription to that because TRS has basically become the official radio network of the National Justice Party at this point. But you can listen to it for free and it's on Telegram. But we went through in detail. We spent the whole show. We went like 3 or 4 hours breaking down Putin's entire speech. But it's interesting that Putin is putting out there what he's willing to sit down and negotiate. Like they've annexed these territories. They've gotten them back. They've included these people. Now they're part of Russia. And there's no reason to keep the conflict going. He's not looking to incorporate the entire Ukraine. But Zelensky has just taken a completely unreasonable position of just, you know, like basically the unconditional surrender kind of mindset with Putin, because he has no reason not to. It's not his blood. It's not Jew blood that's being spilled. It's Ukrainian blood and others. Americans, you know, there was a famous video circulating of some American mercenary with a Southern accent going around. And the guy, even Mike and Stryker were saying, this guy is like a total badass, but he's a mercenary. You know, he's being paid. If that guy gets killed, that's no skin off Zelensky's nose. And if the more nationalists that get killed, if there are sincere, like national socialists of Azov, the more of them that this war chews up as cannon fodder, the better for these Jews when the settlement's over, you know, because they won't have to deal with them anymore. So he's not out there taking bullets. He's not going to quit. He has no reason to quit.
I concur. And one thing I've got to say as well is Azov Battalion are very good at going into Russian territories and murdering and brutalizing Russian civilians. I, as a nationalist, and somebody who wants the best for people of European descent all over the world, I couldn't do that. And I absolutely couldn't do that under the orders of
Someone could say to you, the Russians are doing the same thing to the Ukrainians, and that is horrible, and it's abhorrent, and it's awful that this has even come to this point. However, I will say Putin's choice in this was basically to just accept NATO coming right up to the border of Russia, and then what? And then what? You know, I think that Russia is acting, even though Russia went into Ukraine, this is a defensive war for Russia, for what Russia is, for Russia's survival and what they're trying to do. This is a defensive war because look at all the promises that NATO wouldn't expand and how it has expanded closer and closer and closer. And we've also seen, Mark, I mean, do you remember when Mitt Romney was asked in a debate like 10 years ago, what's the biggest threat to the Zionist global world order? I mean, they didn't call it that, but to the, you know, and he said Russia. I mean, so this is something that they've been for years. They've been building up to this point. But yeah, I can't imagine killing a Russian, even a soldier in combat, with a clean conscience, having that on my conscience that I killed some Russian for Zelensky and for Biden and Kamala. And I also, even more so, wouldn't want to eat a bullet myself for those people. I mean, because they're just laughing about it. They are laughing about it. They're laughing at you. They don't. Every nationalist that's killed in Ukraine, Kamala and Biden and Zelensky and these Jews in Biden's cabinet and the Jews in Zelensky's cabinet. You think they care? They care. They're glad that it happened. They're glad that that's one less they have to worry about.
Yeah, it's I agree. Rory Herbert gave $3. Thank you so much. And said, my son went to school with a descendant of Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg. I met his father, who was wearing a very smart Austrian-style suit. Does Warren have an opinion on the bomb plot of 1944?
Yeah, they were absolute traitors. They were total traitors to the Third Reich, and Hitler was right to have all of them rounded up and executed. And it's funny because they built monuments to them in Germany. I mean, if Stauffenberg had been successful, if Hitler had been killed in 1944, Germany would have surrendered, and all the bloodshed from that point to April, May 1945 wouldn't have stopped. What would have happened was Germany would have broken down into like civil war, basically, between the faction that had killed Hitler and the factions that were trying to hold on. The Soviets would have rushed into Germany. All the refugees that made it out, I mean, this is the point made by others, all the refugees that made it out of the East, because the Wehrmacht and the SS were fighting so hard in the East to allow these refugees to get out of the East, the Soviets would have just landed on them, and the bloodshed and chaos and death and destruction would have been even worse than it already was had that bomb plot been successful. So holding up Stauffenberg is like holding up Judas. I mean, it's holding up a traitor of traitors. You know, Dante in the Inferno put traitors on the ninth circle of hell. They are the traitor is the lowest form of life. The traitor is down there with the devil in the ninth circle of hell, and that's where Stauffenberg and the July bomb plotters are. Is on in the ninth circle of hell because they are the most infamous traitors in German history.
I agree. Traitors and snitches, the lowest of the low. Phil Barker gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, hell, Mark, hell, Warren, the best of Anglo-Saxon Empire. Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. And I'll also say the people who are saying, oh, well, Putin was critical of Anglo-Saxons. Aren't you upset by this? I'm not upset by this because...
I know what he means. We know what he means. You think he's going after us? You think he's going after the average British person or American person who is a white person of Anglo-Saxon blood who's getting having to pay higher prices, has to worry about getting raped by some non-white, has to worry about their kids getting tranny propaganda in school? You think that's who he's talking about? I mean, come on, that's not a good faith. That is not a good faith argument. That's not a good faith argument. You know, I'm not Russian. I'm mostly German, Hungarian, and I got a little English and Welsh in me. People years ago, I remember you remember, Mark, years ago when people were like, oh, well, the future of white nationalism is in Russia and in the East and the Slavs and all that. and the Germanic Western Europe will die, but Slavic Eastern Europe, that'll be the future of the white race. I don't want to see that. I want to see the Germanic peoples of Western, Northern and Western Europe and of the United States. I want to see them survive and thrive. I'm not a Russophile, and I'm not some kind of self-hating Anglo-Saxon. I'm sure you're not either. But it's like, if you can't see what Putin was saying, I mean, even, you know, when you talk about the Anglos, it's the English-speaking world, the Anglosphere. I mean, that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about the Anglo-Saxon race. It's retarded.
I agree. So we'll do the chats now from over on Odyssey. Reed Johnson gave $10. Thanks so much. Said, happy belated birthday. On September 26th, Nord Stream blows up. On September 27th, the very next day, Poland inaugurates the Baltic Pipe, carrying non-Russian gas in roughly the same area. I'm with Tucker Carlson that someone's eliminating their competition. What's your take on the Baltic Pipe going online? Well, I think it's all part of the same American plot. America... Yeah. Have obviously orchestrated this because they do not want Russia having geopolitical influence in Europe.
Yes.
And as I've said before, they don't
care
if the
people of Europe starve or go cold and hungry this winter. They don't care. That's an acceptable, the better for them. They're like
collateral damage. Millions of pensioners in Europe will likely freeze to death this winter. And that's just collateral damage for the Biden and Truss regimes so that they can keep, sham going on in the Ukraine.
Maybe it's killing two birds with one stone. Maybe that's an added bonus. Maybe that's and I think that's the way it is with, like I said, how Zelensky feels about a Ukrainian nationalist who's wearing Third Reich insignia on his uniform and he goes to fight the Russians for the Ukraine and he gets his head blown off. Zelensky's and these Jews are like, hey, wow. We're killing two birds with one stone here. That's one less Ukrainian nationalist we have to worry about, but also we still have cannon fodder who can go die in our wars. You know, that's how they're viewing the situation with the energy in Germany and Europe. It's like, more Western Europeans will freeze. Good. We want that. We want that the death rate of white Europeans to go up at the same time we're achieving our geopolitical goals. I mean, the Jews always do stuff that it has like three or four different angles to it. They never do something that's just like they're taking a hit on this, but it's an acceptable hit because they're getting this out of it. It's always there's like 10 or 12 different benefits that they get out of any move they take. And I think that they view that as a net positive if pensioners in Germany, for instance, freeze to death over the winter.
Thank you. Dino Legovic, 1964, gave $3 and said three for two. Thank you so much. DSalon7 gave $5. Thank you so very much and said National Justice Party and PA handshake across the sea. Thank you so much. Cat Hugger gave $5. Thank you very, very much and said happy birthday to our favorite nationalist leader. Get a piece of cake and a cup of tea on me. Thank you so much, my dear. $5 came in from Strasser and he said shekels for Mr. Putin. That's getting clipped out. One Odyssey token came from Harry Haller 123 and said what you guys make of the Netflix show about Jeffrey Dahmer. If you haven't seen it, it's obviously full of sneaky woke propaganda. Super high IQ, virtuous black people, gay people are awesome, intelligent and not degenerate at all. Every time they're going to push this narrative, it's tiresome. I didn't watch it and I don't really watch much TV. I've watched countless documentaries on subjects to do with crime, etc. I'm very well versed with the Dahmer case, so I wouldn't watch a documentary on it. A docudrama on it. I'd rather just watch a factual documentary on a case of a serial killer. There's no need to dramatize something like that and add bits in for titillation. It's a gruesome case, very interesting but gruesome. But what I will say is, I'm just not going to watch it. What do you think, Warren? Have you watched it?
No. Okay. No plans to. I caught Jesse and Mike on the prep for TDS this morning talking about it, and that was actually the first I'd heard about it. But no, I have no interest in that. Like, you know, I have no interest in, my only interest in serial killers is how do we put more of them in the, you know, make them into fertilizer. I mean, like, it's not a subject I'm really interested in.
Thank you. Full Stop gave $20. Thank you so much. So thank you, Mark. Something small until we can get that hardback book sorted for my son, Henry. Thank you so much. Also, great to see Warren on your show of Miss Modern Politics. Thank you very much. Mr. AG gave $35. Thank you very much. He said, hello, Mark. First time donating to you. What's your opinion on this? In southern Finland, Kotka. They will remove the statue of Lenin after 40 years. It was removed from Kotka yesterday. What's Warren's opinion on it? Enjoy part of my life savings. Well, thank you for your generosity. And I'm happy. I would love to see all communist statues torn down, melted down, smashed, destroyed, desecrated, and ruined. You know, the fact is, there is a massive like crypto memorial to Karl Marx by his grave in London. I can tell you what, if there was a big Mosley memorial like that, it'd be smashed every week. So, and I'm not suggesting anyone goes and smashes it, but it's amazing, isn't it, that a certain group of people who have killed hundreds of millions across the world, their statues remain, whereas anyone who's a nationalist, regardless of what crime they may or may not have committed, they might just be totally law-abiding people. You know, their gravestones or memorials are smashed up and the government does nothing about it.
Yeah, I'll just say to that, especially if there are any Finnish people listening, you know, this is where what I was saying, that as nationalists, we're not always going to agree on everything, and we're not going to have different, like, what's in the interests of American, white Americans is not always going to be what's in the interests of every nationalist around the world at all times. You know, Ukraine is kind of a fake state. It was created, like Czechoslovakia, as a sort of buffer state. Stryker's been talking about this. Bits and pieces of other countries, including Hungary, were cobbled together to make Ukraine. And Ukraine has been something that's always been part of Russia or part of that, you know, that influence. And it's the same people. Finland, on the other hand, the Finns are not Russians, and they're not the same people. They have a totally different language, different ethnicity, and Finland has had a very rough history with Russia, as countries tend to do when they are neighbors. So if I was a Finnish nationalist, you know, I would probably feel very differently about what's going on right now. But at the same time, you have to watch out, because Finland's talking about joining NATO, and Finland could become the, look at what happened to Poland in World War II, Mark. Poland was used as the excuse. Actually, going back to Napoleon, I mean, you know, the Napoleon's 1812 invasion of Russia was the Polish War. It was over Poland. That was the excuse given. But if you look at World War II, Poland was the excuse given. Oh, we got to protect little Poland. And what did Poland get out of it? Poland, you know, Katyn Forest, all their leadership exterminated. They got it from the Germans. They got it from the Russians. And then they got years of the Iron Curtain of this dictatorship and ethnic cleansing and everything else. So. Even if I was a Finnish nationalist, and I might feel very differently about Putin than I do as an American nationalist, I would still be wary of people trying to, in NATO, trying to use my state and my people and our historic struggle as Finland against Russia as a pawn in the global chess game against Putin and in favor of Zog. But yeah, to the point, if they've ripped down a statue of Lenin, good. Yes, more statues of Lenin being ripped down is a good thing.
Thank you. Warren, this is 2 Odyssey tokens from Nikis. Warren, are you going to make a Christmas special on modern politics this year too? I really loved your Murdoch Christmas special last year. It generally made my day better.
No particular plans to do it. We are going to try to knock out a few more before the end of the year. Like I said, we do have a lot going on. We're actually expecting, Emily's put this out there already, but we're expecting another child here very soon. So we're going to be very busy over the holidays.
Congratulations. But,
thank you. But that was you know what it was? I just wanted to, we hadn't heard from the Murdochs in a while, and I really wanted to do a tribute to them before their stuff got faded out. And I made an appeal at that time that I'm going to make again, if they're listening to this, that I hope they make more work. I hope, you know, things happen, obviously, and stuff goes on in your life, but we need the Murdochs to continue to make stuff. But that was like, it didn't really fit in with the kind of stuff I do on modern politics. So we made it into a Christmas special. But yeah, I've not, in fact, I'm drinking coffee out of a Murdoch mug right now that we can't, you can't buy them anymore. So yeah, if you guys are listening, I hope you continue to make some content here in the new year.
Yeah, they were fabulous. They're amazing. It always brought a smile to my face when I saw a new upload. Yeah. 24 hours gave $5. Thank you so much. So Putin's speech was great. I'm not sure if it was only to troll Western leaders rather than him genuinely being sympathetic to our side. Well, I'd disagree with that because.
Yeah, well, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, if you look at the response he got from the rest, from the people watching. That wasn't a response of people rolling their eyes and being like, oh, he's at it again. That was a response from people like, yes, you're speaking for everyone here. He'd also be trolling his own people. I just don't think he is. But you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm now a year of doing shows with Mike and Jazz. I'm used to just like cutting off and interrupting. Like, that's how you do a podcast. So with you, it's always this very like nice, gentlemanly, where you make a statement, I make it. I'm sorry if I've been jumping in too much this podcast.
No, you go for it, mate. You're the special guest. We've only got limited time as well. But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter whether Putin, whether he was sincere or not. He's putting these narratives out there. He's putting the ideas out there. I don't need to look at what's going on in his soul while he's saying it. You know, maybe he's cynically invoking these ideas because it helps Russia's geopolitical interests. If he's blurting out, saying the things about this, like, for instance, questioning the rules-based international order, whose rules, who came up with that, or questioning the fact that Germany has a puppet government that's oppressing its own people. It's a military-occupied country that was subject to horrific war crimes, the worst war crimes in all of history, in my opinion, during the war. Talking about the tranny agenda and how they're trying to make, you know, make all these different genders. If Putin is just saying that cynically for Russian geopolitical interests, who cares? I mean, I'm glad he's saying it as a major world power. I'm glad he's out there saying it. That's good for us. That's why I say, you know, Mark, I'm just sick of this amateur crap of people treating this like it's a spectator sport. I mean, we are political actors in a political universe. We have to operate on the basis of political realism. So when a guy says something like that, I'm going to agree and amplify as loud as I can, regardless of whether he meant it or not, you know?
Thank you. Milos M gave 1.14 Odyssey tokens. Thank you so much. So great guest, Mark. It's always a joy to listen to Warren. I want to say that Eastern European communism did not take well to LGBT people. People of Foglobo Homo should be aware of that. Thank you so much. Lord Aragon gave $1. Thank you so much. He said, people in America first are getting arrested while Baked Alaska and Nick do online gambling and talk about McDonald's. It's a daycare, not a serious movement. Thank you. Three Odyssey tokens came from Western Kind United. He said, we need to stop the anti-white system. Well said, brother. All peoples have the right to preserve their race and culture and to pursue their well-being, including Western Kind. We affirm and apply this right by recapturing of the mind subverted by anti-whiteism. We recapture our destiny. Bryce, thank you so much. One Odyssey token came from Double Feature, and he said, Daryl Brooks' trial has been entertaining so far. Thank you so much. Yeah. Man Animal gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, great show, Warren. In your latest NJP speech, you made a profound point about how Zog repays us for fighting their criminal wars and winning them. With this terrible conflict in Ukraine, do you have more hope that all remaining goodwill and cooperation with these people will dry up sooner?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I hope that that's why Putin was making the points about Germany, obviously. I mean, that's why he was making the point, because they blew up Nord Stream. They're screwing over their own German allies. And Putin's saying, like, how much more are you going to take of this, Europe? You know, I mean, are you just going to sit and take this? I mean, this is your thank you. They're treating the same way they treat the Azov guys who are cannon fodder. That's the way they treat their allies in Germany and everywhere else. The Kissinger quote is very apt that you cited earlier. But yeah, that's what I hope. I hope out of this comes the realization that and Americans, like that lady I spoke to, that old lady, the cashier at Walmart, who said, what are they doing for us? Yeah. Look at how bad things suck in the United States right now for regular working people, for seniors. I hope that the spectacle of Biden dumping endless billions into Ukraine and then the media playing this up like Putin's the new Hitler, I hope it further undermines the legitimacy of this system where people are just ready to scrap the whole thing.
Thank you so much. We have 5 Odyssey tokens from Cat Hugger. This is probably the only thing she's ever said that I disagree with. She says, Warren is the second most handsome nationalist after Keith Woods. It's a fact. I'm not happy that I'm not included on this. So, like, what am I, like, the gargoyle that hosts the show while these beautiful men surround me? Warren's blushing. Emily's gritting her teeth. Oh, gosh. Thank you for the Odyssey tokens.
I'm a cat person also. That's all I'll say to that. I love cats. I grew up with cats and I love cats.
I love Cat Hugger. She's great. $20 from British Gammon. Thank you so much. My friend says, this stream is on fire tonight. Thanks, gents. Well, thank you so much, my friend. An Arab social nationalist gave one Odyssey token. Thank you so much. Said, Entropy doesn't like my card. I wanted to thank you both for your balanced and sane attitude to matters outside Europe. It matters. The work you both do, oppressed as you are, is effective. To Warren, what is more damaging to the white mind, basic capitalist Judeo-GOPism or the Democrats?
Definitely the first one. Definitely the first one. That's absolutely. And you guys can watch Modern Politics. We're going to have a new one out here very soon. And one of the things that we looked at was in 1948, a conservative, reactionary, pro-capitalist, anti-commie piece of propaganda that was put out that still basically put out the same message as the left on race. That you know, any kind of racial division, racial hatred, Americans, people of all races and all this. So I think that that poison on the reactionary capitalist right and the GOP is the thing that holds us back, really. I mean, the Democrats, it's that the, I want to see Biden stay in. I hope Kamala becomes elected. I hope she gets to be president, just because it's so much easier to wake people up when they have this than if we get another phony like Ron DeSantis or even Donald Trump back in.
Thank you. And finally, Scaredy Cat gave $3. Thank you so much. Said, hi, everyone. Marx Judeo-Americanism is brilliant description of the present. Previously, Jews consolidated systems of money flowing from humanity into their pockets during the British Empire, upon which the sun never set. Now we're all fighting for third phase not to happen. Total Jew ownership of Earth. Thank you very much. And finally, G. White gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, if Tyson Fury endorsed Patriotic Alternative, would you let him join, Mark? Yes, I would. And he said, Warren's a good guest, by the way. And Warren is amazing. It's been great tonight. We've had amazing numbers. Overall, across all platforms that we can see the numbers of, we had about 700 watching, and we had nearly 1,900 over on Radio Albion. So very strong numbers tonight. And we don't know the numbers for Wake Up UK. So you can add them in. So it's likely that tonight we had somewhere between 2,600 and 2,700 people watching live. So very strong numbers. Warren, we've just managed to wrap everything up in the right time. It has been an amazing show, my friend. Please give yourself a suitable outro before we shut things down.
Well, thanks again, Mark, for having me on. When you had me on to you, your Telegram, like I said, has been on fire this whole week. And I'm glad that we can start pushing back on this crap that all year since this conflict started. I mean, it's time to just zero tolerance for any kind of this pro-Zelensky, pro-Ukraine crap. And just, you know, call out the enemy, which is Zog, which is what they're doing to us, what they're doing to our people, and not beat around the bush and not try to do this both sidesism. I'm sick of doing it. And I think the people, like I said, the people that are pushing the other line are either dupes and fools or shills. Thanks again for having me on. People can, if you want to hear my full breakdown of the speech, we went point by point with Jazz Hands on Fash the Nation. As I said before, you can find it. It's our latest episode. It's out there. It's for free. It's out there on Telegram, and it's on therightstuff.biz. Please go to therightstuff.biz and become a subscriber, or better yet, go to thenationaljusticeparty.com, become a supporter, and you can become, through that, you'll get a subscription to TRS included in that. You can financially support us, what we're doing. So look for future events. We're going to be out there doing more activism. We're going to be out there doing more conferences, at least one more big conference before the end of the year. And keep an eye out for the Modern Politics Emily and I are going to have out in the next day or so. But thanks again for having me on, Mark. A big salute. Happy birthday, by the way, and a big salute, as always, to everything you guys do, every single member of Patriotic Alternative. And if you're in the UK and you're not active, getting involved with Patriotic Alternative, I don't know what the hell is wrong with you. You got to get active with this group. This is a real group. This is not just an internet personality.
Well, thank you so much, my friend. It's been an absolutely amazing show tonight. This show has been complete fire from start to finish. I hope no one takes things we said out of context. And I think we've both clarified that what we seek is an independent Europe, but we think the best way to pursue an independent Europe is by the destruction of the force which has done Europe the most harm, which we label as the Judeo-American state, and more to the point, the Judeo-American Western liberal democracy that state has forced upon Europe. I just want to thank Warren. I want to thank the thousands of people that have tuned in. I want to thank people who gave such generous donations tonight. Honestly, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I will be back on Friday for the PA monthly roundup. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your evening. I love you all. Stay strong, keep fighting, and we will be back again same time next week. The guest will be Joel Davis. Thank you so much, and I'll see you all again soon. Have a great evening.